It's What's New from WBAA Classical and WBAA.org. I'm John Clare. Six degrees of separation is an idea that all living things and everything else in the world is six or fewer steps away from each other. You can connect any two people in a maximum of six steps. The idea was originated in 1929 and popularized in a 1990 play. You probably have heard of Six Degrees of Kevin Bacon. We'll connect three composers very easily, not only through the Pulitzer Prize in Music, but through study at Cornell University. Carol Huza was a professor at Cornell University and lecturer at Ithaca College in upstate New York. Among his composition students were Stephen Stuckey and Christopher Rouse. We'll talk with them and hear their Pulitzer Prize-winning music on today's What's New. Stephen Stuckey was a great friend of mine. We had several interviews and worked together on the American Music Center board. He passed in February 2016, just 66 years old. Our first conversation addressed his recent Pulitzer Prize-winning work, The Second Concerto for Orchestra, that used musical motifs from Names.
Yeah, it's a kind of inside joke, which it's perfectly fine for the audience never to know about, although it did mean something to me and I think to the people involved who were present at the premiere. There are these, as you say, kind of encoded musical monograms in the first movement of the Second Concerto, and they range from the initials of the orchestra, the Los Angeles Philharmonic, to the architect of the building, Frank Gehry, to the guy who used to run the orchestra, Ernest Fleischman, and to the woman who runs it now, and to the people who commissioned the piece, and so on. And so this was just a kind of, you know, family album approach. Also, to be honest, you have to get your material somewhere, and there is something attractive about essentially meaningless, abstract material that one can then work on somehow. A part of the joy of composing or making a piece of art of any kind, I think, is the sheer sort of technical challenge of making something out of nothing. And honestly, you know, to make your themes out of the letters of the alphabet is to start with more or less nothing. All the responsibility is on the composer's shoulders to make it work somehow, but that's the fun of it.
Stephen Stuckey from a 2006 interview. Here is The Second Concerto for Orchestra that won the Pulitzer Prize in 2005. Lan Shui leads the Singapore Symphony on What's New. Stephen Stuckey's Second Concerto for Orchestra on What's New. We heard the Singapore Symphony and Lan Shui conducting. You can find out more online at WBAA.org, including our playlist and podcasts. Christopher Rouse was a friend and classmate of Stephen Stuckey at Cornell, and they studied with Carol Huza, whose Pulitzer Prize-winning third string quartet we'll hear later. But first, a conversation at Rouse's home in Baltimore from August 2006.
How did you know you were a composer? How did you know that you wanted to express thoughts in music?
I was very young. I was six, I believe, and I was listening. I can't tell you why, but I was hearing a lot of early Elvis, Little Richard, and all of that, and loving early rock and roll. And my mother, who was a subscriber to the Book of the Month Club Music Appreciation Recording Series, said, well, okay, but why don't you listen to this music and see if you like it. And she sat me down and put on a recording of the Beethoven Fifth Symphony. I was actually sitting in the chair you're sitting in now. Well, new chair, but same spot. And it was really a revelation to me. I was just completely floored by it. And while I still, over the years, maintained my love for and interest in rock and roll, I decided at that point that I wanted to be a composer when I heard that symphony. It never occurred to me that I wanted to play music, perform music. I wanted to create it, which is why I was always terrible about practicing the various instruments that I tried in some later years, because I just did not want to play an instrument. I didn't see why I had to learn to play the piano in order to be a composer. So, in retrospect, I would have to say that I There are times when I wish I could play an instrument, the piano, for example, for teaching purposes. But as a composer, I don't feel that I've been hindered by not being able to play. Now, I do have a little keyboard that I occasionally use just to verify things or whatnot, but I am forced essentially to be able to conceive the music without the help of an external aid, shall we say, a piano or some other instrument. Certain other non-performing composers also had to learn to hear, from Berlioz right on through to William Schumann. I think sometimes it really can help a composer as an orchestrator, that a composer will then tend to hear ideas. Berlioz said that he heard ideas already orchestrated. There was no separation between a musical line and its scoring, eventual scoring, which is also the way I hear. I don't hear a line. I hear a line scored for already. It's already an oboe line or a horn line.
Yeah, and I think that comes across very well in things like the guitar concerto, that I can't imagine that being anything else. I can't imagine the trombone concerto that won the Pulitzer. And these things just all, I think, feel right for the instruments.
Well, thank you. Over the years, I've become really very comfortable with orchestral repertoire, so that in writing for an instrument that is a member of an orchestra, I feel, you mentioned the trombone, I feel pretty capable of writing for that instrument without having to consult a player. When I wrote the piece, I remember I consulted my soloist once about a G pedal tone, how softly he could play a G pedal tone. But the rest of the time, I felt okay just going off and writing the piece. And of course, inviting him to tell me afterwards what needed to be changed, but he said, no, everything's fine, nothing needs to be changed.
Oh, cool.
So it's not that I'm patting myself on the back here, it just comes from experience. Not playing the instrument, but knowing the kind of medium in which I've encountered that instrument so many times over the years.
Some of the trombone concerto by Christopher Rouse that won the Pulitzer Prize in 1993. Let's hear Rouse's Symphony No. 4 with Alan Gilbert and the New York Philharmonic on What's New. Christopher Rouse's Symphony No. 4, played by the New York Philharmonic and conductor Alan Gilbert on What's New. Find out more about this and other episodes online at WBAA.org. I'm your host, John Clare. It's What's New from WBAA Classical and WBAA.org. I'm John Clare. We're featuring three composers, all winners of the Pulitzer Prize and connected through study. Coming up, Christopher Rouse's orchestra work A Life, Odne Zeisen. In July 2007, I spoke with Stephen Stuckey about composition and his teacher, Cal Huza.
Yes, and in fact, this is a good time to ask me that question because I've just been thinking about it. I had the very pleasant experience of being able to host my teacher, Carl Huza, in Los Angeles about a month ago. And it was the first time we'd ever had him to the Los Angeles Philharmonic, believe it or not. And it was a very nice sort of closing of the circle, listening to his music, and in the same concert listening to the music of my, not teacher, but mentor, Lutosławski. I was hearing a kind of autobiography of myself, you know. So I've loved reconnecting with Carl Huza, and some of my students, current students, are now rediscovering Huza, and so we have a kind of three-generation, you know, relay race going on here in Ithaca. Some of them are beginning to meet with him and show him their music, and this is all very, very satisfying to see the generations connecting in that way.
Stephen Stuckey, speaking from an interview in Ithaca back in 2007 on What's New. Let's hear Etudes for a recorder by Stephen Stuckey. Lon Shui conducts the Danish National Orchestra with Mikla Petri on What's New. Etudes by Stephen Stuckey on What's New. We heard Mikla Petri, the Danish National Orchestra, and conductor Lon Shui. There's more at WBAA.org, including playlists and podcasts. That's WBAA.org. Stephen Stuckey introduced me to his teacher, Cal Huza, and we spoke in September 2007 about his string quartets, whether it was easier or more difficult to write for a genre you have already written for.
It may be both, maybe. You see, as I have learned the string instrument, I had some understanding of it, how things are, so I love to write for strings. In fact, I have four quartets, and even the quartet that I have written when I was second year in conservatory has been played now in Czechoslovak Republic. I haven't heard it live myself. I have heard recording of it. And some people think that it's my best quartet, which I don't believe. I mean, it's a student work. I think that writing for string quartet is an incredible challenge because you have four voices and you have to give each something interesting. In an orchestra, for instance, let's say if we take even some classical symphonies, the first violin part is very interesting. Some of the cello parts may be interesting, but the second violin parts and viola parts are not so interesting. In a string quartet, you have to give everybody something interesting. And that's a challenge which I like.
Carol Huza, from a 2007 interview in his home. Let's hear the String Quartet No. 3 with the Fine Arts Quartet on What's New. The String Quartet No. 3 by Carol Huza on What's New. The Fine Arts Quartet was featured in that 1969 Pulitzer Prize-winning work. I'm John Clare. Find out more about this show and find playlists and podcasts at WBAA.org. I spoke with Huza student Christopher Rouse about teaching.
Do you recommend certain things to young composers that are trying to find their own voice?
Well, I assign listening to all of my students. Not necessarily for the direct and overt reason that, oh, when you listen to this, this will be a light bulb going off over your head and now you'll see the answer to some compositional problem you're having. But just because they need to hear a lot of repertoire and they need to explore not just the standard 50 pieces, but I mean, I'm always giving them Joachim Roth and Franz Schmidt and so forth, because I've found over the years a lot of answers ultimately in some rather obscure 20th century composers. And I've also found a body of repertoire that I love that may not influence me directly, like Roth. There's some Roth that I really adore. Now, I think one would have to search long and hard and ultimately in vain to find any real Roth influence in my music. But I love that music. I'm so grateful to have had the chance to get to know something like the Fifth Symphony of Roth. It's a wonderful piece. And as I say, the influence of other composers like Alan Pedersen or Andras Szilagyi or Carl Amadeus Hartmann, composers that aren't necessarily as well known, but the discovery of whose music did have a very direct impact on my own work. is important, and I think students need to be aware that there is a repertoire beyond Schoenberg, Bartok, and Stravinsky in the 20th century. As far as finding their own voices, I tell them don't look for it, because the more you look for it, the more elusive it will be. Just be patient, and if you're going to have a voice, it will find you. Be patient. Your voice usually is not going to find you when you're 21 or even 25. Usually, for most people, it hits in the late 20s, early 30s. If someone asked me to do a piece of music that was a self-imitation, do a Rouse imitation, I wouldn't be able to do it. But on the other hand, I could do a piece that was a Crumb imitation. I could do a piece that was a Harbison imitation or an Adams. John Harbison's a good friend, and I spoke to him about this. And he has no idea what it is about his music that makes it recognizable and individual and clearly his. He said, oh, but I could easily do a Rouse piece. And I said, well, I could do a Harbison piece. So we don't often have insights into our own, whatever it is that makes our own music what it is. But other people seem to. And, you know, beyond that, I want my students to write music that they believe in. I don't really care about style, language. It can be complex, it can be simple, it can be minimal, maximal, tonal, non-tonal. Doesn't matter to me, as long as they believe in it. And, of course, what I'm going to do is react and say, well, I think this section probably needs a little pruning. It goes on too long, and you haven't given me the climax that you're implying is coming, and why? Is this intentional? Are you saving it, or did you just not do this right? Things like that. But I'm more of a reactive composer. I'm not the sort who's going to say, okay, now this week I'm going to teach you how to write a fugue. I'd rather they come in with something that they have composed, and I'll respond to it rather than my directing them how. Now I want you to write a contrapuntal piece with only 8 notes. Choose 8 notes, but you have to eliminate 4. That's not what I do. Some people do, and some people do it very well. They present a certain kind of challenge to a student that's a preconceived set of limitations. It's going to be this kind of piece. Occasionally I will tell a composer who's been writing a lot of flute music that maybe it's time for the viola, or write music for media other than the ones that they've already composed in. But other than that, I try not to be too overly directional about things.
Part of Rapture by Christopher Rouse. Let's hear his Odin Azizen on What's New. Alan Gilbert leads the New York Philharmonic. Christopher Rouse's Odin Azizen, A Life, on What's New. We heard the New York Philharmonic and conductor Alan Gilbert. What's New is a production of WBAA Classical, a listener-supported broadcast service of Purdue University. Production assistance from Erica Yon and Kevin Howard, the content director and executive producers Greg Kostraba. I'm your host and producer, John Clare. Thanks for listening to What's New.